Hello, curious cats, and welcome to the fourth episode of the podcast. I don't know about you, but for me, the beginning of the year was really, really busy. But I'm glad that I finally got around doing this episode. So, without further ado, let's get into it. The story for today will be short but intense, and that is not because there isn't a myriad of things about our subject worth mentioning, but because she unfortunately had an early and tragic passing. She has written one of the few PhD dissertations directly linked to a Nobel Prize and has laid the groundwork for modern embryology and developmental biology, together with another influential biologist of the 20th century. Her name was Hilde Pröschold, later called Mangold. She was born in a wealthy family in Thuringia, Germany, on the 20th of October 1898, from Gertrude and Ernest Pröschold. She was the middle child, and her father came from a family of artisans and chinaware painters. He started working at the soap factory during his young years, and after gradually going through the ranks, he got to marry the owner's daughter, Gertrude, a woman that was gifted and educated, and who was active in promoting women's rights. It sounds to me like the proper environment for a young Hilde, a one she needed to develop her own independence and personality. But of course, just a nurturing environment is not enough. And Hilde showed something else, a spark of brilliance. And with the help of her family and also her own talents, she got into a prestigious school, Gymnasium Ernestinum, at just 16 years old. And that was such a special thing because at that time very few girls were ever accepted in a gymnasium of such prestige. After she finished with flying colors, there was an attempt to put her on the path of what was considered appropriate preoccupations for a lady by sending her to a private institute for young women that was specialized in teaching them etiquette and housekeeping. That was, however, short-lived, as after 6 months, she got into a chemistry bachelor's at the Jena University. And after a semester, she moved to study zoology at Frankfurter Main University. And this is where her whole life trajectory took a turn for the better. Sort of. You'll see. Here, she met Hans Spemann, trailblazer of modern developmental biology, who came as a guest speaker from Freiburg University. He was studying the early development of the salamander embryo and was conducting complex and delicate experiments to figure out how these processes occur. After that, she decided to follow the science again, or Spemann for that matter, and moved to Freiburg. Reading this, I kind of wished I was in those golden days when science had this chaos about it, moving around with so much ease and having more control over the subjects you could study. If it wasn't for the sexism, of course. Here, Hilde seems to have found her place as she remained 2 semesters, where she took a wide range of lectures and also met the people that would later be her PhD colleagues. After a year, Spemann realized her potential and accepted her as a PhD student, together with Victor Hamburger, with whom she developed a tight friendship. Her first assignment was to turn the hydra inside out. This is a small freshwater organism. I will put some pics on the podcast Instagram, or you can also Google this little creature, but if you think ain't nobody got time for that, then just imagine a slim tube that is closed at one end, and at the other it has around 8 long and thin tentacles. My very sharp deduction skills tell me that this is why it got its name. And the point of this experiment was to see if the inside layer of cells will acquire the characteristics of the inside layer and vice versa upon inversion. These layers resemble an embryo's organization, being made of three, which were ectoderm. Ecto comes from the Latin of outside, then mesoderm, meso, middle, and endoderm, endo, inside. And different organ systems and body components will derive from one of these three layers. So the point was to see how do they know what type of cells they are and what should they later form. Spemann hoped that they will change identity, also because Abraham Tremblay conducted this experiment nearly two centuries before and claimed that that was the case. So the initial trials seemed to have been successful, but when she attempted the full-blown experiments, Hilde could not repeat the results. Shockingly, animals tend to not like when they are turned inside out and will revert to their natural state. I don't know. I hope you were sitting down for this news. So, because it seems that the prerequisite of being a boss is thinking that you could do everything better than your underlings, Spemann tried to do it too, but he was also unsuccessful. Which turned out to be actually a major win for Hilde. And not only because her next project was groundbreaking, but because Spemann wasn't a stranger to giving his female students grunt work that went largely unrecognized. And this temporary fail forced his hand to give her a more meaningful project. Another testimony of this was from another female student, Salome Welsch, which I will probably be covering in one of the next episodes, who was part of his lab around that time and was also giving boring tasks that were designed to fit into a potential project for a young man later on. Fortunately, Salome went on to become one of the founders of modern developmental biology. Love to see a fellow stubborn human being. But anyway, now we need to take a small break for our daily portion of science. And also, it will serve as an introduction to Hilde's new exciting project. So, remember the three layers I mentioned before. Well, the rearrangement of the cells in these three layers occurs just after the egg fertilization, and this phenomenon is called gastrulation. One of the titans of developmental biology, Louis Volpert, famously said, famously for nerds like me, that it's not birth, marriage, or death, but gastrulation which is truly the most important time in your life. So, next time when your partner asks you what's wrong, tell them that they miss the most important thing in your life and they never pay attention. Let me know how that went. Anyway, after the cells are specified in each of the layers, they cannot turn back. Experiments done prior to this crucial point showed that what was later coined as embryonic stem cells could go on and become any of these three layers. But at that point, nobody knew why. Spemann noticed in the salamander embryo that when it was in the two-cell stage, so a very early stage, there is this cleavage forming in the middle of the embryo called the gray crescent. The name is kind of self-explanatory, as it looks exactly like a gray crescent moon. And this region will later give rise to the dorsal cells that are initiating gastrulation. At that point in time, these cells were thought to be of importance, but their actual function was unknown, and this inspired Spemann to go further and find out. Okay, now back to our normal program. After the failed attempts with the Hydra, Hilde was given the task to perform transplantations on the newt embryo this time. Newts, or, you know, the Latin name, let's be fancy, Triturus cristatus. It's a small amphibian similar to the salamander. He already did some preliminary work with it and wanted to pursue this project himself, but being a group leader comes with a lot of bureaucratic and organizational bullshit, and lack of time made him pass it on to Hilde. If you remember the first episode of the podcast, the following experiments might sound familiar. So in order to determine if these dorsal cells were doing what they were hypothesized to do, Hilde had to skillfully transplant them from a darker colored newt embryo to another lighter pigmented one, so you can clearly see the difference between them. The catch with these experiments was that they needed to be done in one mating season of the newt, as they didn't have the techniques to create the embryos in vitro at that time. And after reading this, I promise to never complain about time constraints in my research again. So, the fertilized eggs needed to be closely supervised and promptly used when they reached the wanted stage. And with the very thin glass needle designed by Spemann himself, she had to gently remove the outer membrane of the embryo, dissect the dorsal cells with said needle, which were then transferred into the host embryo. And to be able to manipulate such delicate sample, Spemann had to come up with an ingenious tool called the hair loop, which is exactly what it sounds like. What he did was to take a thin strand of baby hair, first time from his own baby, and make a loop with both ends into a tiny glass pipette, which was afterwards sealed with wax. What I can say, this is the only type of child labor I condone. And then she performed hundreds of transplantations, around 250, and in the end only 6 embryos were considered fit enough to be presented in the report, meaning that there were many others that displayed a degree of success, but not entirely. According to her notes, the yield was around 10%, and this was due to the embryo's fragility, as well as the high incidence of infection that couldn't be prevented upon release in the pond. Despite this low number, later experiments will confirm and consolidate the findings. So, what these 6 embryos had in common was that, besides the neural tube or body axis that was formed as expected from one embryo, there was a second one, a darker colored one, than the, let's say, primary axis that was clearly from the cells that were transplanted. So those cells were so important and they decided the fate of all the cells around them in the embryo. And this is what Victor Hamburger, her good friend, had to say about their time doing the experiments in his biographical essay on Hilde. So I quote, "After some practice, doing the experiments was fun, but we had to cope with a very high mortality. The embryos, once removed from their protective jelly membranes, were extremely delicate, and at the time we had no weapon against bacterial infection. It took most of us 2 years to complete an experiment. Prushold had a particularly difficult job because her experiment involved transplantation from embryos of one species to those of another species, thereby increasing the risk. Her plight and also her stamina and perseverance are attested by the fact that of her many experiments over 2 breeding seasons, only 6 embryos were eventually found worthy of being presented to the general public in the famous organizer paper. In early May of her second year, she managed to obtain an embryo with 2 separate neural tubes of different colors, as I mentioned before. And this proved that the dorsal cells were the ones that were instructing the neighboring cells to take specific fate and migrate. Everybody, including Spemann, were deeply impressed, and a bit later these findings were reported as a postscript in another of the Spemann's publications. This is when the term organizer was coined to describe this region made of dorsal cells that was orchestrating the process. After another breeding season, Hilde was able to finish her project, published together with Spemann in the Ruhr Archive in June of 1923, and it appeared in print in 1924. Although the magnitude of the findings were not immediately evident, her research was so important that Spemann insisted to put his own name on the publication, while all her male colleagues published alone, and also he put his name first. But regardless, while he designed the hypothesis and the tools, she was able to fill a task unlike any other that required passion, determination, and perseverance. However, the saddest part is the fact that she will never live to see this discovery being awarded the Nobel Prize, and her flourishing career was cut very short in a domestic accident. During her PhD, she got married to Otto Mangold, Spemann's right hand, and after successfully defending her dissertation, she moved to Berlin with Otto and their young son. In 1924, a gasoline heater exploded and she died the next day due to her severe burns at only 26 years old. In 1935, the discovery of the organizer was awarded in only Spemann's name, as this prize is not awarded posthumously. So, if you intend to win one, maybe, you know, do all the boring things your doctor told you to do or not to do. But jokes aside, the problem was that during the Nobel speech, he mentioned Hilde only 2 times, and he conveniently left out the fact that it was her dissertation on this topic that brought the discovery to light. And this is one of the reasons why I also wanted to make an episode on this, as she's not mentioned in the textbooks much, maybe at all, and sadly her work was greatly minimized, especially in the light of the fact that she was active in the field for only 2 years, so she didn't have enough time to make a name for herself. As someone who knows what a pain biological experiments can be, I would come back from the dead to haunt my supervisor if they would do that. So what I would encourage you to do is, for all of us to do, is to keep talking about her and keeping her and others' memory alive to make up for the lack of recognition they experienced while alive. So for the silly conclusion of this episode, I guess Living long enough increases your chances of receiving a Nobel Prize. Smart, I know. But seriously now, what I took from this story was that pursuing what you are passionate about, regardless of the barriers in front of you, will eventually yield success and recognition, even if you don't live the day when it materializes. And success, I guess, has a lot of definitions and can be a very long game, but that doesn't take one bit off of our accomplishments. Persistence can go a long way, and I think it is very important to remember that each of our lives have completely different timelines, and going in our pace can be very liberating. And most of all, I guess we should all have to remember to remain humble and thank the people that helped us be where we are. I hope she will be forever remembered as a woman who broke expectations, took life head first, wasn't afraid of change, and inspired other people to choose science. As usual, in the end, I will say a few words and read a couple of paragraphs from Hamburger's essay to commemorate Hilde as the person beyond her scientific persona. I quote, "Soon after our arrival, a friendship developed between Hilde and me that was based on common interest in science, art, and literature. By nature, she was open, frank, and cheerful. She had a penetrating and reflective intellect and a lively sense of beauty in nature and in the arts. Like myself, she had grown up in a small town, loved the outdoors, and was familiar with plant and animal life. She was perhaps at her best in the endless discussions and debates with kindred minds at the extended through long evenings in the open-air taverns, at the square around the cathedral, or in our small rooms. When we were in danger of taking ourselves too seriously, it was her sense of humor that saved the situation. We were fortunate in that we had more time for such exercises than students today, because we did not have to prepare for examinations. There were neither midterms nor finals. We ourselves were responsible for what we learned or missed in a course, but then we were at the level of seniors or graduate students and had received most of our college-level education at the gymnasium. Hilde Prochold and I were less adventurous. We were more attracted to the intellectual and artistic movements flourishing in the young Weimar Republic. We were attuned to the poetry of Rainer Maria Rilke and Stefan Georg, and to German Expressionist art, which challenged the traditional aesthetic values and tried to abrogate the laws of nature. The walls of our rooms were decorated with blue horses of Franz Marc, as well as with the graphic art of the German masters Dürer and Cranach. We sensed the affinity of Expressionism and the medieval art that surrounded us in Freiburg. Hilde Prochold and I shared a vivid interest in the rich flora of the environment of Freiburg. The high mountains of the Black Forest harbored alpine plants and glacial relics, gentians, alpine primroses, and saxifrages. Toward the west, an unusual Mediterranean plant community had settled in the warm and sunny Rhine Valley. In early spring, the slopes were covered with white and blue anemones. Our most precious finds were rare orchids in the woods and hillsides of the Kaiserstuhl, a volcanic intrusion that rises like an island out of the Rhine Valley. The vineyards there produced the best local wines. One of their connoisseurs, our botany professor Altman, an elderly bachelor and bon vivant, familiarized us not only with the Latin names of many rare plant species and their long journeys from remote regions of Europe to this idyllic spot, but also with his favorite inns in the small towns and villages and their special homegrown vintages. So as always, I'd like to thank you for listening. I will put all of my resources in the description. And also, if you'd like to see a figure of the experiment that I mentioned in the episode, I put one on the Instagram page I made for the podcast. If you also like to subscribe there, I would be very glad as well. And leave me a comment, send me an email, or just listen to it while you go on about your life and think about Hilde Mangold and what impact she had in such a short life. Hopefully we'll all get that sort of success at some point. But yeah, thank you again, and I hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.